Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point, then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam show. Let's go! Turn it up!
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Episode 278, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Pancakes and Power Slam show. I am Chris Featherstone. As always, follow us on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page, Crave Wrestling. So I'm really excited to have this person on the show tonight. We had something scheduled last year. Some things came up and life transpired, and finally, you know, he's on the show tonight live, and really excited about what we're going to talk about tonight. This person just came up just being a thoroughbred, just showed even at a young age how much you can achieve in a major promotion. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some goings on as of late, and just to clear the air about some things that's not true. So we're going to talk about that tonight as well. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to bring to the show former Impact World Champion, former GFW Global Champion. Without further ado, Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm good, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So one thing that you were put over a lot was you started at such a young age and you achieved so much within Impact Wrestling. So let the listeners know, like, how you got your opportunity to get into TNA. Did they recruit you from wrestling in the UK? How did that come about?
I'd love to say that they recruited me from my wrestling, but the reality is that I was recruited because they had a public profile from a TV show, you know what I mean, from Gladiator.
Gladiator, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, there were people who, well, I think even in the company, even pretty high up executives, you'd be surprised how many of them didn't realize that I was actually an independent wrestler.
Oh, wow.
They thought I was just a guy that's been taken from a TV show. But, you know, I wasn't. But then, you know, my wrestling didn't exactly indicate a seasoned vet at that point either. So, I did it.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, it came, you know, it ended up in your favor positively. You know, they gave you a nice profile and so forth. And even at a young age, at the time, and still young. But when you went to TNA, I think it was what, about 2008, and you were at that time, you were what, 21, 22 at the time?
I was signed in 08 at 21, and then debuted at the beginning of 09, but just turned 22.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so did they have something already set up for you, or was it just kind of play it by ear? Because I know that you were feuding with a few people.
Yeah.
You came in as a heel, if I'm not mistaken. You had the kind of like the pompous gladiator type of deal.
The infamous helmet.
Yes, the Spartan style.
That was a Vince Russo, idea, I guess. I never really got to the bottom of it. I think, I like Vince as a person. You know, so I'll sort of bust him about it every now and then if I happen to have a conversation with him, but. I'm not sure that anyone there was really aware of what exactly the TV show I was on really was or why I had been. I do know that Kurt Angle had seen the show, and I had done the reason. I got over on that show by doing a wrestling character, basically by doing a wrestling persona. I was doing very sort of wrestling 101 kind of promos in an environment where most of the shows were not. That wasn't their forte. And I do remember that, as well as Dixie seeing the media coverage and seeing the sort of profile I was getting and saying, like, this guy's a wrestler, I think we should try again. I guess Kurt was over for a media tour, or at least this is what he told me, and he saw me do a promo and was just like, that it has to be a wrestler. There's no doubt in my mind he's got to be a pro wrestler, or at least be a pro wrestling fan.
Yeah.
And by the time he had contacted the office, to say, I think we should take a look at this kid in the UK or whatever, they said, oh, do you mean, this guy? Like, and then he said, yeah. And they said, we just signed him. So that was always, I took that as a huge compliment. But I don't know how much of that was ever shown to the, Dutch Mantel and Vince and whoever else was sort of making the creative decisions at that point.
Yeah.
What I was presented with when I got there was very different from what I was doing on the show. At 22, and you don't really have much say. Looking back at it now, had I been recruited later and with a bit more experience, I probably would have said, hey, let me send you, some of my best stuff from this, and help us sort of shape the character together. But of course, I didn't do that. I just showed up and was like, okay, what do you want me to do? That's the way it goes.
Yeah, I mean, especially 21, 22 and getting a break after being a contestant on a TV show, I mean, there's not much, pull that you have at the moment. A lot of times people get their pull based on, being a company guy and being, kind of checking every box and then getting to the point where they have clout. We see that all the time with people who are in positions of power now. So one thing I've noticed throughout your time when you were competing in Impact, that you were a part of quite a few tag teams. I know one time it was with Desmond Wolfe. Of course, you were with the British Invasion, kind of a makeshift tag team that really worked is when you were with Joe. While you were teaming up, the different teams that you were a part of, who would you say that your favorite partner was during your time at Impact?
I get asked this in different ways quite frequently, but I would have been dead in the water without Williams. There's no doubt about that. The tag team gave me the ability to learn on the job, which is not something that you should be doing on prime time. Fight TV and on pay-per-views and stuff, but that's the situation I was in. I was thrown in at the deep end, and believe me, for anyone out there who sort of criticized my work back then at that point, and they had a right to, I was well aware of my shortcomings as well. It wasn't like I was sitting there thinking like, you have to remember how good the roster was at that point. I mean, AJ and Kurt and Bobby and, Beer Money and the X Division was cooking. I mean, Jay Lethal and I mean, everybody on those shows. Plus, you had like Steiner, Booker T, Nash, Mick Foley, Sting. Everybody on that roster was like the cream of the crop, and you know, you were exposed very quickly if you weren't up to snuff. So, but I've always sort of reacted well in that situation where I'm like, all right, I've got to sort of fake it till I make it. And the tag team gave me the opportunity to do that because I knew I could talk. I was good on the stick, and Doug was able to carry the load in the matches, and allow me to sort of figure out the timing and the mechanics and structuring and how to put finishes together and how to put a match together, you know, in the correct way. And I dare say that from Doug's point of view, I was able to compensate for his one shortcoming at that time, which was his mic work, which, by the way, is fantastic today. You know what I mean? We helped each other in that respect, but he certainly helped me more than I helped him, and I needed him more than he needed me.
Yeah, I could definitely tell when you. I'm a big fan of Doug Williams. I think that the Rolling Chaos Theory is one of the sickest finishers of all time.
To answer your question, sorry, I went off track there for a second.
No, it's all right.
You know, the team with Doe was a different situation because it wasn't something that we anticipated, and obviously it was very, the whole sort of premise of it was that we were opposites, and that it almost wasn't supposed to work. But I mean that in the storyline sense, to be an odd, you know, an odd pairing, because I think it started off from like a
wild card tournament
type of story. Yeah, that's right. Wild card. That's what I was looking for. And so that was sort of the whole premise was supposed to be that. Hey, I believe the intention was that we were supposed to have like a couple of matches and sort of muddle our way through them and win. And then we were supposed to feud with each other. It was supposed to be quite a short thing. And then I was such a fan of Joe's. And I could tell. And I was also quite self-conscious of the fact that he was at different times during his run in TNA so grossly misused that I was like, I was very conscious to like that I wanted to make it good because I could see that he was thinking like, this is what they're doing with me, you know what I mean? And he probably wouldn't admit that, you know, because he's too nice, but I could tell that he was thinking, like, what the hell is this? Like, I've got to, you know, like, I know I've got to have this guy as my tag team partner. And I was so determined to make that good, and I was such a fan of Joe's work that, you know, without sort of patting myself on the back too much, like, most of our double team stuff, I already had it in my head because I was such a fan of his stuff that it just flowed so naturally for me, and I went, hey, you know, we can do the thing with you. If you give him the squisher and Inzaguri in the corner instead, you know, then you could, like, whip him out to me and I could do the elbow off the top, you know, and he was like, yeah, cool, let's try it. And it ended up just being one of those things where we just heard the reaction and looked at each other and went, like, and there was just chemistry there because I think I was such a fan of his. He started to figure out, like, okay, there's much more to this guy than perhaps we've all realized, and then he also realized, like, we just got the strongest reaction on the show.
Yeah.
And we came back, and obviously some people had noticed. I think, you know, Bischoff and a couple others were like, there's something there. You guys have got really good chemistry, and so it immediately it sort of went from, I think we're going to drag this out a little bit, and then, you know, and then we were the tag champions, and, you know, arguably one of the sort of the more reliable acts on the show to get a good reaction. I think we filled the void that Beer Money had left, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you guys were a fantastic tag team, and it was interesting because it was more of a, it was like you said, it was a strange bedfellows type of pairing at first, and it just seems like, just watching at the time, it just seems as if that it was going to be something short-lived, but like you said, the reaction towards the chemistry of the tag teams worked so much that it was great. A couple other things, I was really just kind of confused of how your affiliation with the Main Event Mafia came about, because if I'm not mistaken, you became a member of the Main Event Mafia before you won your first championship, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so how'd that come about?
Believe me, I was very self-conscious with that also. I hate speaking for guys who are much more accomplished than me and putting words in their mouth, but I was under the impression that that those three, Kurt, Sting, and Joe, were sort of involved in that process as well, legitimately, you know, not just in terms of the storyline. I don't know whose idea it was in the creative team at first in terms of, but the discussion was had where they said, the thing we want to do differently this time with the Mafia is we want to have one guy who's like the future. You know, we want to have sort of the established incumbent, you know, top stars, the kind of the current, like, you know, locker room leader and sort of top guy and go. And we want one guy who's like the tip guy for the future.
More of a prodigy and role.
Almost like, I guess, similar to, I suppose, the Randy Orton in Evolution.
Evolution,
kind of,
yeah,
kind of
makes
situation.
Sense. Yeah.
And I think, and they sort of presented that to those guys, and I was the name that came back from all three of them. Obviously, I had the affiliation with Joe, and Sting had always been such a strong advocate for me. He had, like, I mean, by that point, I had wrestled Sting on TV, and that was, you know, even though it was a very throwaway match at the time, like, internally, that was like a big milestone for me, because Sting was the one who had basically said, you know, let me work with this guy and basically let me pretty much call the whole match, and it was a short TV match, but it was a TV main event, and it went great, and, you know, got Sting where he needed to be. So then there was a sort of flicker there with some of the respected sort of old school guys like Jim Cornette and stuff, who sort of went,
yeah,
hey, that, you know, that kid's like unselfish, and, you know, he did what he needed to do, and, like, just, you know, just completely fit the role perfectly and got Sting where we needed him to be. And Sting was the one who sort of went, this is my guy, kind of thing. Like, I want to keep going with this guy.
Yeah.
So between all those things, it was just, I had some momentum then. There was no doubt. Like, the we were doing the Tom thing. What was it called? The BFG series. And there was definitely momentum there. You could just feel the shift where people were finally starting to buy me as a babyface. And then they said, I just remember the week before, Dave Lagana saying to me, hey, do you have, like, high, you know, do you have some, like, custom made big quality ones? And I was like, I mean, that I have a suit, you know, not something I have anything to write home about. And he's like, well, go out and get some custom made suits this week, because you need them next week at TV. And I was like, all right. So, yeah, I went out and dropped like $4,000 on suits or something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Hopefully made it back.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I mean, they, you know, the one thing I can't complain about, you know, at least during those years, was, you know, that they treated me very fairly, you know,
awesome.
Financially. I fought for it, you know, like, I mean, I always just made sure. I dare say that might be one of the things that works against me, you know, today, is that, you know, certain people who were with the company at that time, who are now with another certain big company, you know, that I was always someone who was keen to make sure I got what I deserved, you know, fought for my worth and negotiated hard. So, you know, it was the right thing to do, and I would always tell anyone it's the right thing to do, because, you know, ultimately it's a business. But, you know, I dare say that it's not necessarily working in my favor today, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and that goes hand in hand of the last thing I wanted to talk to you about so there's been a lot of reports actually that broke within the past week that there was some contractual disagreements and you asked for your release. for, you know, GFW, Impact Wrestling. But just, you know, just clear the air on that, because we talked off air and there's those rumors aren't true, because there weren't, I mean, there wasn't a contract to begin with.
No, that's right. There was no release. There was no, you know, there was nothing like that. It was, you know, a contract was offered to me, which I declined. And that was, you know, I've seen a couple of reports. I tend to stay away from all this stuff these days, just because I'm too busy with you know, being a dad and running a business. But it's kind of like, I still love pro wrestling, and I'm very dedicated to it. But I kind of had this epiphany during all this time where I said, I never really got a chance to do a character and do the pro, you know, pro wrestling the way I wanted to do it, and I felt like I just had this epiphany where I said, you know, change here, and the best way to do that is for me to be 100% independent, and, you know, and make a splash, you know, in a new way. But with regards to that, you know, obviously I had been affiliated with GFW and Jeff and all that, from the sort of early days of that, you know, the first champion and blah, blah, blah. And when the situation came up with Anthem and all that, they offered me a contract. I read the contract. It's not something that, I'll say this in the nicest way I can. It's not a contract that anyone with any value, any sense of self-value or self-worth would sign. You know, it just wasn't. Well, it was just no. There's no, you know, to me, the only time you should put your name on a dotted line is if there is, you're getting something in return. Because otherwise you may as well be, you know, you're an independent contractor.
Right.
So there's no point signing a contract to make you exclusive to one place if you're not getting anything in return. And again, I wish them nothing but the best, but the guy I was really excited to work with was Alberto, and I worked with him right away. And I didn't feel like I would be challenged there in the way I needed to be challenged, you know, creatively and artistically, and obviously monetarily, they're not going to be able to, you know, they're not in a position to really offer anything that offsets those things. So I just politely said, I won't sign this contract. However, if you need me, you know, I can work on a handshake, which we did for a number of shows.
Yeah.
And I guess the only thing that bothered me a little bit was the fact that, you know, I feel like I've been very dependable and loyal to Jeff Jarrett, and then, you know, I didn't find out from him that they didn't want to keep working that arrangement, you know, which is fine in a sense, because I didn't have any long term plans to be around that stuff anyway. I could see all the negativity, and I just didn't want to be associated with it. But at the same time, I had dates in my calendar that were, you know, that I had written down just like any other independent promotion. And then I had to find out from, like, somebody else, like, oh, yeah, apparently, you know, we can't do anything with a guy who's not under contract anymore. And I was like, well, it would have been nice to find out from,
yeah, certainly,
from the guy who's supposed to be, you know, I don't know. But
yeah.
Other than that, but, you know, let's face it, they've got way bigger problems at the moment. So I just, overall, you know, it was a combination of all of those things where I said, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and back away slowly.
Yeah, certainly. Well, you definitely made your stamp in Impact and in GFW. You know, just the time that you were there, off and on, for the better part of 10 years, you know, it definitely left an indelible mark. Your stock is quite high based on your time there. So let the listeners know what's next. You have any dates coming up?
Yeah, so I head to the UK tomorrow, and then I have the 28th Gainsborough, 29th Leeds, 30th Lincoln. Then the following week, I'm at a Comic Con called Geekfest in Wales. And then the week after that, House of Hardcore, Freehold,
nice.
New Jersey, and Philadelphia, the infamous the arena. It's about
yeah.
my first time there, actually.
Oh wow, nice.
And just and I, like I say, I had a moment where I went, it's time for something new. I've been in the comfort zone too long, and it's, you know, the bar has been raised, and I like that. I'm accepting the challenge of all of the talent that's around now.
Yeah, so. Making your own schedule, promoting your own brand—that's one good thing about the so many opportunities to make good money in the indie promotion now. You know, from former champions like yourself, it's really a good thing. So let the listeners know where to find you.
Yeah. So you can get me on Twitter at RealNickOldis. I have a Facebook fan page that was recently set up, which is, you know, same thing at Real Nicholas, and then on Instagram I'm at Nicholas. So you can get me any of those. Nicholas.com if you're old school and you want to go to an actual website.
Awesome. Well, Nick, it's been a pleasure. I wish you the best, man. I mean, you know, 30 years old and accomplished so much, you know, so far in the wrestling business, man. I mean, people start your age. So you've accomplished, you know, you've been a world champ. So that's fantastic, man. I wish you nothing but the best, and there's so much left.
Yeah, I feel like I really scratched the surface, so thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot, Nick, and enjoy your evening.
Thank you.
Again, once a very, very, very big thanks to Magnus Nick Aldis for being on the show tonight. Thank you so much for continuing to leave a legacy, man. Just only 30 years old and really making some big headway. Almost 10 years in GF, well, TNA, Impact Wrestling, OWL, whatever you want to call it. Last week I was supposed to plug some AfterBuzz TV. My good friend Marty Elias, he's affiliated with that. And so go to YouTube and check out AfterBuzz TV. WWE Hall of Famer Lita is also affiliated with that as well. So YouTube AfterBuzz TV. Ladies and gentlemen, this is episode 278 of the Pancakes and Power Slam show. And we're going to have some fun like we do all the time here on the show. But I want to first give a warm condolence to my co-host on the show, wonderful man, just a good friend of mine, my dude, Evan Tech Prout. He's going to be joining us in a matter of moments, but I definitely want to give my thoughts and prayers from a public standpoint here on the show to all the listeners. He lost a dear part of his family. His mother passed last week, and you know, I'm a big fan of faith. I'm a strong a proponent, devotee of Christianity, as people know. I'm very expressive of that. I am just an avid proponent of the Bible. Ecclesiastes 3 talks about how it's a time to mourn, and so I think with this time, you know, when you have a lost one in your family, it's really good to get around people who support you, people who can pray for you, people who can cheer you up when they know you're down, and because it's really a really tough time in this. For this time in his life. So our prayers are with him, and let's bring him on to just let everyone know, you know, how he's feeling. And man, I give you much props, Evan. that you're on the show with us. So thank you so much for being a part of the show tonight, man.
Hey, no problem, man. It's always it's an honor to be here on the show with you. Wouldn't have missed it. You know, I didn't do, you know, I canceled. We were just talking last week about a long string of dedication of shows that we kept doing shows, and, you know, we didn't cancel any shows, but of course, with, you know, my mom, you know, passing away, going on to glory, you know, I went ahead and I had the opportunity to still do the show, but I decided to take a break and still wanted to do something tonight, as usual, because I know she was a fan of my, of course, she loved my show, she was a fan of yours and your work, Chris, and, you know, and I hear now saying, you gotta still do your show. You gotta keep doing what you're doing on the regular. So, but I'm at peace. I thank everybody for the calls, texts, messages. I did a Facebook Live video. Anybody that's a personal friend of mine, I'm not sure if you saw your Featherstone, of thanking everyone for it. But I'm here. I got into wrestling because of my mother. So, my mom always said, I'm the reason why I became a big wrestling fan, which is true. So, I'm doing fine. Yeah. You there?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back live and living color and funky like a monkey, if you will. Moment of silence for Heaven's family and just getting things together. So it's, you know, it's great to have Evan back on the show tonight, and you know, we're gonna have some fun. You know, I hate to say the show must go on because it's really, you know, like I said, it's a time to mourn. So he definitely should. Should have that, you know, that time, and, you know, but I feel so honored and privileged that Evan is back on the show with us tonight. So, Evan, you ready to rock and roll, man?
Yeah, brother, I'm here. I'm ready.
All right. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the headlines. Here we go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's start off with the boy, Mark Henry. That's what I do. Announces his retirement, man. He was on Table for Three, and he was talking about how he was transitioning from being in the ring full-time to a backstage role. He was going to be a certain type of guy from now on. And, you know, he's done. He's only wrestled like three times this entire year. So, I mean, he was transitioning out anyways. But Tom made his formal announcement when the nation was on Table for Three. And, you know, it was definitely a very interesting thing that he, you know, decided to leave the pro wrestling business. He's been in the business for 21 years now. And I definitely think that, you know, he had some ups and downs throughout his career. And, but, you know, sadly, I wish that there were times that we could have seen a little bit more push. You know, of course, his Hall of Pain, you know, 2011 push was just absolutely incredible. Just running roughshod through people, especially Randy Orton at the time. And Sheamus, you know, he was going back and forth with him. Hall of Fame was great, but, you know, he started to get into the, you know, candy apple singlet and a bunch of other things that really that candy apple sealer was no good, man. It was no good for the eye at all. And, you know, just some ups and downs. He just major losing streaks and just really, really putting people over. It was just, you know, just an awkward moment for the past few years of his career. I honestly wish, now everybody can't have a swan song as they go, but I really wish that Mark Henry would have had some type of Intercontinental Championship run or U.S. Championship run, something to that nature, you know, before he retired. I think last year, you know, the Miz was still pretty heavy into the Intercontinental title scene, and I would have loved a feud between Mark Henry and the Miz for the Intercontinental title, and he won the Intercontinental title. He could have lost it at WrestleMania. That could have been his official last day. I think that would have been pretty good because, you know, for someone to be in the business for 21 consistent years in the WWE, you don't have much of that. I mean, The Undertaker has done it before. You know, of course, you know, people like The Undertaker, people like, you know, Triple H. But he was, you know, he's been part time for years, you know, so really Mark Henry Big is Show. Really the only person consistently. Big Show came in 99, but Mark Henry and Kane up until like last year, Mark Henry and Kane were the only two consistent people that's been in the business for the WWE for 20 plus years nonstop. So, you know, I wish he would have got a little bit more, you know, reward for that.
Yeah. Mark Henry, that's, you know, we all knew.
Yeah.
His comedy. And it's like Big Show. Big Show came, he's been there forever. Then when they start downloading you and just having you pop up just to get over the younger talent, and then you just disappear for another 2-3 months, and then you show up again, and he throw you in random mixed tag matches. That's when you know your delight is at the end of the tunnel. And I think I said on my show last week with Mark Henry, you know, he can get his 401k through WWE or AARP because the man went through all four. He went through four generations. He showed up in about 95, 96. He showed up with that big old leather cap, All-American Mark Henry. I think he debuted at, was it Survivor Series? One of them years. What was one of the big four. I think it was Survivor Series. He showed up during the New Generation era. Then he was through the Attitude era. And then he was through the Ruthless Aggression era. And then the current era, whatever you call it. I'm not even sure.
I think it's called the reality era or new era. Reality
era.
Reality,
so that's something to say. You've been through four generations of WWE.
And, you know, thankfully in his resume, he's been a world champion. He's been an ECW champion. He's been a European champion. So he's got some, you know, he's been a former world champion, even if it's the big gold belt and it's still part of the WWE's lineage now. So he's been a world champion in the company. He's not been the guy, which, you know, arguably should have been at one point of his career. But he wasn't the guy, but, you know, thankfully he can say that he can't hold his head up high and say that he was a former world champion at WWE. So with that type of accolade, you know, it would seem that he would make it into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, my thing is this. I mean, he did that great promo with that salmon suit, that salmon blazer, and everybody got and he. And so why can't you give him Mark Henry? We're still waiting for our first black WWE champion, by the way. Why can't you give him the title, even for that one night? Hey, give him a Kane run. Even I remember that year, I think it was the Elimination Chamber. It was, and remember Henry got the big push, and he was almost. I think he was like the last two, and I think he lost to Cena, whoever it was. It was like, why couldn't he have won? And then lose on Raw the next night or lose on SmackDown. But, nope, I think they missed the ball with that. I mean, yeah, he was world champ. But yeah, that's a secondary bout. But WWE champ, they could have did that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. That Salmon era when he had that, you know, that so
hilariously funny gimmick when he, you know, he said, you know, you think it's that easy? I got a lot left in the tank. And I just, that was absolutely hilarious. But, you know, it was funny because there was something about that whole deal that I was like, man, it's a ruse. It's a ruse. So, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's bring on special guest. He is back and better than ever, like Eric Bischoff's theme song. I like to call him the Black Bombshell. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Alfred Konowa, how are you tonight, sir?
What's going on, man? I love that nickname, the Black Bombshell.
Yes, sir. Give me 10%. We'll be good to go.
I got worked by that Mark Henry speech. I thought that was like you guys were saying, the greatest promos of all time. There's really nobody in WWE in very many eras I can think of who could stand in the middle of the ring and do something like that and trick really most of the people. The way he cried in the ring like that, I thought it was real. So,
yeah.
What a great career.
And he still had the weave too, the hair weave, the extensions or whatever it was. Yeah, the braids, and you know, there was like he couldn't do it now so much. He couldn't be the sappy now because you know the bald head, you know, put a little bit more type of dominance in his character. But back then, you know, he was still dominant, of course, but. But for some reason to me, the haircut made it a little better as far as being sappy. And, yeah, it was – and the salmon blazer, I mean, that was a perfect choice of garb to wear to just really kind of fill in the sappy character. It all went extremely well. So, kudos to Mark Henry. You know, I think that, like I said, he'll be in the Hall of Fame. I think it's a no-brainer at this point that he'll be there. And I think it's well-deserved. What are your thoughts, Evan, as far as him being in the Hall of Fame?
Absolutely, 1,000%. 1,000%.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree. Yeah. Why not? I mean, like I said, the man been there. He got a 401k in WWE. He's been through four generations. There's a handful of wrestlers that can say that for any company, especially WWE. And, I mean, he had his couple world title runs. He even had the ECW Platinum Belt, which was third tier. And,
oh, yikes.
I mean, he even survived that. I mean, he even survived Rodney Mack and Teddy Long with the Hater Raid. He survived wearing them red candy apple singlets. He survived them blue candy apple singlets. He survived those sky blue singlets.
The cotton candy singlets with the blue ones.
Yeah. He survived the cotton candy singlets. He survived the candy apple singlets. He survived the angle with Sammy in China. He survived the leather cap, the American cap in 95. And he survived losing a part of his hair. If you remember, he fought Benoit in Monday Night Raw. And Benoit went for a cross face. You remember some of his hair fell out in the ring. And this is right before he got injured. So if any man, especially a black man, can survive all those things.
Don't forget that wicked, almost, you know, paralyzing F5 he received from Brock Lesnar.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I think that was A-Train, but I think not A-Train.
Oh no, that was A-Train. That was that was A-Train. But Mark Henry had a pretty sick one too that Lesnar gave.
Oh yeah.
I think it was on the episode of Raw. I think at the time he was wearing like a white singlet.
I remember that.
Yeah. But yeah, it was very, very interesting career for sure. Speaking of Brock Lesnar, he is reportedly not expected to re-sign with WWE. To me, this is no surprise. I think, you know, it was one of those things that it was exciting to see him back in 2012. It's been approaching 4.5 years now that he's been back. And this, to me, I have not seen – to me, there was a couple moments with Brock Lesnar that was – attractive, that was marquee worthy to me. I was a huge, marked out like crazy, like I was a kid again when Goldberg beat him at Survivor Series. I think that was a fantastic choice to do because it was unpredicted and it was just, I mean, the shock value. We haven't seen that type of shock value in years. But, I mean, other than that, I mean, he had, you know, his match with Punk was decent. I was a big fan of his match with Roman Reigns at 31. But, I mean, the Triple H feud was meh. You know, breaking the Undertaker streak to me still was a terrible idea. Let's start with Alfred this time. Lesnar reportedly not coming back after WrestleMania 34. Is it a big loss?
I wouldn't say it's a big loss because Brock Lesnar doesn't work a full-time schedule. He barely even works a part-time schedule because, I mean, he's working like 5-6 times a year. WWE could soldier on without him, but I really don't think 100% that he's leaving. I mean, I know that he's now expressing interest in UFC, but this is just what Brock does. I remember last time his contract was up, remember he showed up to UFC 184 and they thought, oh, he's going to fight again. And then WWE re-signed him the next month. It's like one of these posturing things where Brock knows exactly what he's doing. He's in the last year of his contract, so now all of a sudden these reports are surfacing. And don't get me wrong, the UFC would love to have him, and I do think that they're going to do everything they can to book Brock Lesnar versus Jon Jones, which I think would be fantastic.
I don't think
Brock Lesnar leaves. Like, he can have his cake and eat it too, and I think Brock Lesnar would be foolish to just up and leave WWE because you're working, what, 10 times a year, and you're making reportedly a $5 million downside. Forbes reported that he'd make $12 million last year with bonuses and everything included. So I don't think he can leave.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fantastic point. It just seems like that's a fantastic point, that very much so, and I agree with it. Just to be contrarian, so to speak, the very fact that, I mean, he was making a big wad of stash back, you know, in 03, or it was 04 when he left. At that time he was just burned out, and of course the schedule was much different. You know, now he gets to hang out in Saskatchewan, denounce the American. You know, I don't know if you guys know that, but he actually represents Canada now in the UFC. He just denounced his American birthright, and he actually comes by way of Canada, because, you know, he has a house in Saskatchewan. So he's Canadian by adoption now. So he just kind of hangs out in his house, eats the finest, Lesnar cut steak, and enjoys himself. And it just seems to me that, you know, Heyman is his true agent, his true advocate. It just seems like Lesnar is at the position now, and we'll get to Evan here in a minute. Lesnar's at the position now where he's probably just like with Sable, laying on the couch, watching some deer hunting show, and he gets a call from Heyman and said, oh, you know, Heyman's like, hey, you remember you've got Raw next Monday. He's like, oh, bleep. You know, and he probably forgets totally that he has, you know, he has a date coming up. And he's like, oh, can we try to push it out to next week, or can I do something, you know, via satellite, you know, or something like that? It just doesn't seem like his heart's really in the business anymore. Evan, what are your thoughts on that?
Is Brock really a loss? I think he is. I mean, people complain all the time. Is he part time? He's quarter time. He's what? It don't matter. Look at the roster today. This isn't the Attitude Era. This isn't the Ruthless Aggression. Whatever you want to call it. Brock Lesnar, like it or not, if he's not, whatever time you want to call it, when he's on TV or when he's on the pay-per-view, his name generates buy rates. It generates people and views. So everybody complained about he's not being used. Some people are attractions. You don't want to see Brock every week, because when the WWE champ was on top every week, example, Seth Rollins, example, Roman Reigns, example, Daniel Bryan, example, Ambrose. Did it really help any of the ratings? No. Not even Captain Four Kids John Cena for a while. The ratings didn't really budge. And, you know, the Maharaja, yeah, that definitely doesn't help either. So all I say is you can convey
the let's not get started on the modern day of
Russia. I will say on a side note, with my girlfriend and all of my buddies that came to support me and watch the pay per view, when I did see the promo that I bust out laughing, thinking of you fellas song doing that.
Oh man, I cannot stand Jinder Mahal's my work. I mean, it just really seems like someone's grabbing him by the throat every time. Like, it seems like literally someone's grabbing him by the throat every time he talks. He's like, Randy Orton, I tell you what, you will not feel the power of the modern-day Maharaja until we get to the ring, Randy Orton. And I'm just like, come on, man. Like, he just, it's so soft and it's so delicate. And it's just so, it's like, man, he's trying just desperately to sound important, but it sounds so contrived, and it just sounds so awkward. There's nothing about Jinder Mahal's promos that sucks me in. I mean, nothing about it. There's nothing. And the thing, I've said this before many times. We'll get to SmackDown Live in a moment. I say this all the time. I say, back in the day, especially the 80s, your mic work was your merchandise. I say that all the time because the people who really had good promos, that was really the people who put themselves over, because especially the NWA, every time you take that 10-step journey from the ring to the podium where Tony Schiavone and either Bob Cottle or David Crockett was over there, and they would give you a live mic. It doesn't matter if you were Manny Fernandez, Al Perez, or Dick Murdoch. You need to cut a promo, and you better plug Saturday night at the Omni. I mean, that's basically what you have to do. And that, to me, that art of mic work has just dissipated. It's gone so. It's left us, and that's what really attracted me so much about wrestling was the larger than life promos and how they would just suck me in. So I'm always really, really critical about promos because that's how I grew up liking wrestling, was because of promos. And every time I hear Jinder Mahal, I'm just like, oh, spare me. Randy Orton, be in my Singh brothers. You will not understand the modern day Maharaja. So I'm like, oh, yuck. what are your thoughts on that? What are your thoughts on the art of the promo, Alfred?
Very important. The promo is, I like that saying that microphone is your merchandise or whatever.
Your mic, your mic work is your merchandise. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that couldn't be further from the couldn't be closer to the truth. I'm a big fan of guys who can cut promos. It's always something that I really look for when I'm assessing if somebody could be a major star. And yeah, you will get hamstrung if your promos either don't come across as genuine, or if you simply can't cut promos. And I think that was a problem with Roman Reigns early, and something that's still kind of plaguing him, is that early in his run, he's always capable of a genuine promo. The guy's a badass. He speaks softly, carries a big stick. There's a way to book him so he can cut convincing promos, which he has now done. But early in his run, they were over-scripting his promos, and they weren't good at all. And people still talk about that Suffer and Succotash promo. So I think it's ridiculous that they're still talking about it, but like that hurt him. But it's often Monday night, and what he's been doing lately, he's cutting self-aware promos. He's going in there. He's not pretending like a lot of the crowd is booing him. He's going in there and acknowledging it. He's saying, hey, they were louder for me in Philly. He's saying that he beat The Undertaker. He's getting them to react. And I think that plays into his character, even though people don't know if he's a babyface or a heel. And I think he's the one guy that works for him because people can just naturally react to him, and there's a connection with the audience. And that connection happens through his promo.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I'm a big fan of separating the two, the face and the heel. But I think you definitely got a point with Roman Reigns, because it's one of those things that, you know, he's, I hate using the term tweener, because I can't think of any tweener that's been ever successful. I mean, people call it Austin a tweener. He wasn't a tweener. He was just an anti-hero babyface. He wrestled bad guys. He feuded against the biggest heel in the company of Vince McMahon. The only tweener that I can think of was like Black Love Diesel was a tweener for a second. And he would always, you know, he would power bomb people when he started to become the heel route. You know, when he was shooting against Bret Hart, you know, he would bump people's fists who had a black glove. So he was a tweener for a moment. And he just went full heel, which was better for him. Sting was a tweener for a little bit when, you know, the Crow Sting came out, and every time someone would mention his name, he would come down and get him in a scorpion death drop. I remember one nice pro, Rick Steiner, did that. It was curtains for him. Hacksaw Jim Duggan did the same thing. Mentioned his name, and it was over for him. So ate a scorpion death drop for dinner.
May I add that Hacksaw Jim Duggan has the ugliest sell of the scorpion death drop, because when he got death drop, you know what he did? His right leg went over top his left leg.
Yeah.
So old school stiff Jimmy Duggan, and the matter of fact, Kane has the ugliest sell to the pedigree in history, because he falls on one knee.
Yeah, he does. He falls right on one knee. But that doesn't beat the taped fist feud he had in 94 against DDP. That was bad news. The taped fist Duggan was, I remember back then. Ming and Paige. I remember when he would go and he would compete at different matches, and the jobbers at the time, it would be like on WCW Saturday night, and he would literally get his roll of tape and wrap it as the jobber was like kind of like grogging, you know, and standing up, and he was just playing it. I mean, he was just kayfabing it to the max, and I was just sitting there like, this has to be so embarrassing for whoever he's going to beat that night, because they had to sit there. I mean, they had to stand there and just kind of play the whole thing out of him putting the tape on. So that was one thing I remember, based on the tape fist Duggan. Sharp turn. Shane McMahon involved in an emergency helicopter landing. Definitely very, very thankful that it did not end up to be anything you know, catastrophic or severe, as we saw. He came back on SmackDown just in good condition again, but definitely newsworthy, and definitely something that you can never take advantage of. You can never look at those moments and think that you've got everything in order, man. Yeah, I mean, it's just like, you never know. You never know when something like that can happen. It could have been much, much, much worse. Thankfully, you know, there was he gave major kudos to his pilot, and they were able to land, you know, semi-safely, you know, in the body of water. But Evan, yeah, I mean, it could have been much worse. It could have been. Not only, I mean, of course it could have been fatal, but it could have been something severe as far as just from a health standpoint, could have jacked up his health.
Yeah, it's a good thing that Shane O'Mac is fine, that he's okay, and that's good news for all of us. And, you know, that's all you really can say. You know, Shane, you know, wasn't his time, and it's a good thing that he didn't go, because in the world of wrestling, I just know, for me, even on a personal note, it seems like every week when we do our shows, we're always doing the send our condolences to this one or that.
Yeah.
A wrestler, a referee, a valet, or you know, someone, you know, on my show, we cover pop culture as well. And then, you know, of course, me personally this week, my mom. So it's just like, thank gosh that hopefully a week can go by where we don't have to say send our condolences or one or something. So good thing that Shane is fine. I'm glad that Shane is okay. Because I don't know about y'all, I have all of the memorial Ross, the Eddies, both Eddies. For some reason, they don't like. For some reason, the Raw Eddie one is hard to find. But I have both Eddies, Raw and SmackDown Eddies. I have the Benoit. I have Raw. Raw's Owen and I'm missing somebody. Owen, Eddie, Benoit. There's a fourth one. They did in the memorial to the whole show. Can't think.
Owen.
Yeah, I said Owen, Benoit, Eddie, and I'm thinking there's a fourth one. Was it the fourth one somebody that died and they dedicated the whole show?
I can't think of anybody else. Benoit, Eddie, Owen. Pillman is through.
Yeah, they dedicated the whole show.
Yeah, Pillman's through Harlan, HWA. That's Thatcher and Danny Davis.
Yeah, they didn't dedicate the whole Raw to filming.
No,
they just did
the shot.
I think it's just
they gave a shout out to Pillman. They gave a shout out to, I think Tess had a big shout out when he passed. Alfred. Speaking of, they're not gone yet, but just passing away, man. Poor Vince. I mean, he's like 72 years old, and, you know, a lot of people aren't fans of Trump, he's 71, and he looks 20 years younger than Vince McMahon.
You're saying Donald Trump does?
Yes, he does.
He does not. And if you ever watch, like, WWE's 24 specials, or, you know, they do a lot of these about people going into the Hall of Fame, like Kurt Angle, and you see Vince, and he's, like, shaking a hand. He looks just so feeble, and, you know, Triple H, who Triple H is still big and looks relatively healthy for his age, and just seeing Vince, he's, like, withering away, and he's, like, hunched back. You can see his back is being hunched and stuff like that, and so, you know, God love him for being able to go out there, and he's still got the energy, and he still wants to do it, but... Yeah, he's not looking too good these days.
No, he's not. Every time I see Vince McMahon, I think of a bump. Like I look at him and I look like at someone who just looks so feeble. And I'm like, Vince, I know that, you know, you probably still got some grapefruits on you. Please don't make the ridiculous decision to one day, you know, take a bump again like you did with, like, the Nexus, or, you know, of course, your days against Hogan and Michaels and Austin. But, you know, if he takes one of those PJ Black 450s again, man, I think that might be it.
He just took a bump. It was that crazy of a bump, but remember Roman Reigns won the championship? I believe it was 2 years ago. He took a bump then.
Yeah, he did. Wow. Yeah, that was... Yeah, if he gets a spear by Roman Reigns, I think that's the last time we'll see him upright. I certainly hope they don't have. But he's 72. I mean, people envy to live that amount of time. Chuck Norris is around his age. You know, Donald Trump. You know, there's a bunch of people who Sylvester Stallone. There's a bunch of people around his age that's been in the game for as long as he has. And, you know, him compared to a lot of other people, you know, his peers. Yeah. He just looks pretty bad.
The question is, is he still a genetic jackhammer?
No, he's not. I think his machine has been in the shop for quite some time now, and I think they're probably just going to pull the plug and say, I think you need to take this engine and it called it quits. But,
you know, just imagine if Jinder Mahal was around when Vince was commentating with that the modern day Maharaja.
Yeah, the modern day Maharaja, and Bobby Heenan would have been next to him saying something very interesting. And I think Jinder Mahal may have survived the Gorilla Monsoon Bobby Heenan days because I think with Jinder, like on paper, you know, he's anti-American, he's pro-India, you know, he looks like a million bucks. I think just on paper, just theoretically, Jinder Mahal has a good character. You know, but at the same time, he's being poorly booked. You know, I don't think he really understands just the importance of, like, facials, cadences. And I've seen some wrestlers talk about that before, just kind of who have been in the WWE that has really critiqued them on just really understand the importance of facial features, cadence, things like that when you're cutting promos. If he had that together, I think it could have been a lot better, but I think it's on the downturn at this point.
It's funny you mention that real quick because I was watching up kind of in and out of Table for Three with Henry the Nation one, and now you watch something, you kind of half sleep, and I woke up 4 o'clock in the morning this morning, and Austin's podcast was on with Triple H, and I got up and snapped on something. Triple H was talking about NXT, and watching it, some of it again, Triple H was talking about this importance of, like you said, the facials and how you move and developmental and going in detail, all the small idiosyncrasies that goes into your character. And Mahal, just his hair's weird too. His hair is like, it looks one way and then it looks crazy. It's like a wacky bush. It's my late
uncle, that headpiece off, it's over.
My late uncle, who passed away 2 years ago, who I was close to as well. He's a veteran, retired military, army. And one of his jobs at home, being an artist and stuff, he actually did, you know, the wax figures that you go to Smithsonian. He actually implanted the hair on the wax figures' heads. So you go to Madame Tussauds and anything, he did the hair. And some of that hair that he did when he's done, it reminds me of Jinder Mahal's hair. This looks wacky. And it's like, what is that?
Because you know what that makes him? It makes him the wax figured Maharaja. Yeah. So, speaking of facial features, someone who had a very successful line of facial features while he was in the WWE, Armando Alejandro Estrada, had a very interesting note recently. He came up with the idea of talking smack. He talked about how he pitched it to McMahon a few years ago. He drove to a live event. I think it was like a SmackDown that he drove to, I think like in Indy or Kentucky or something like that. And basically he pitched it to McMahon, and the only thing that he had at the time, I think it was like 2009, pissed to McMahon, and he was told, you know, thank you and a handshake, and that's it. You know, and 8 years later, talking smack, you know, well, you know, it's here and it's gone, but you know, it still survives the post pay per views, but you know, it was a very it was 2011. He said December 2011, he drove to a SmackDown taping in Indianapolis. So he pitched it to Vince, and he wanted to call it Smack Talk, and he would be the host. Vince smiled, said he liked the idea, shook his hand, and said thank you. Never heard back from him again. So, you know, Alfred, you know, he came up with an idea. It seems legit. It seems authentic. But, you know, it's interesting that people would come up with those ideas, and they would just resurface, you know, years later. I remember I talked to Jake. JTZ's been on the show, I believe, three times now, and he said he came up with Little Jimmy. And
right.
he pitched it to Vince McMahon,
okay. Right.
and basically, you know, Vince kind of overlooked him, and all of a sudden he saw it on R-Truth. So, Alfred, what are your thoughts on just those pitching ideas to Vince McMahon, just like this talking smack idea, just to see it born somewhere else for someone else? I mean, it seems like that is so deflating for a particular wrestler who's trying to get over.
Yeah, well, in all fairness to JTG, Vince probably thought he was giving the Little Jimmy gimmick to JTG, but he just got him and R2 confused and thought they just looked alike. But, listen, I talked to JTG about this, and his idea I thought was even better. He had an idea where it was going to be a dummy. I guess, like, the WWE Universe could see it. And, yeah, it would have been kind of like a lot of the older fans would have rolled their eyes at that, but I think that's something that could have sold a lot of money and merchandise. And I love hearing all these stories about people to Vince McMahon because, you can only do so many things, and it's kind of wild the things that you hear get shot down. And that's kind of one of the infrastructural problems with WWE is that the buck stops with Vince. You know, you got to, at the end of the day, everybody could love your idea, but if Vince says he doesn't want to do it, and it doesn't get made. And then, years later, it'll come up again, and maybe Vince will hear an idea, like, years before, doesn't like it, but then it'll come in his head, and he'll bring it up again, thinking it was his idea. So I think you have to just kind of convince Vince that it was his idea in order for him to make something. But, the I'm pretty sure a lot of people have come up with, the concept of, a post-game or a pre-game. I had heard that, kicking around for years, so... It's not that I don't believe Alejandro that he didn't have an idea like that, but it's not really that novel of a concept. Just let's have a pregame or a postgame show with WWE.
Yeah, very true. Yeah, absolutely. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's get to the Raw and the SmackDown, and let's throw also some Battleground review. We'll be right back. The best SmackDown song of all time, other than the you know, it's my life, my rhymes, my time, whatever it was.
Like,
I love that song.
That was the best.
Yeah, I was sweating my blood
that.
Too.
Everybody standing in front of the laser.
Stress sucks.
Yeah, what are they saying? Everybody standing in the laser tag room. The laser
right.
in the face. Hey, what are y'all doing? Shit.
Yeah, then Angle and Guerrero make the really scary faces and everything.
Mm-hmm. That's the Ruthless Aggression era. That intro didn't feature Triple H, it didn't feature Austin, it didn't feature The Rock. All the WWE's best intros we don't understand any of the words. No one knows the Raw theme words. And no one knows SmackDown words. And Featherstone's laser tag intro with the SmackDown. What was it, 03, 04?
Yep.
05, yeah, 03. No one knew.
That was such a good lineup, though, man. I mean,
but you know what?
The
first version. I think the second version with that theme with Eddie and Show and Brock and that one. The second version better with the Eddie one because the first one Eddie wasn't on that one.
Right.
So,
yeah, I like the one with Eddie. Absolutely. So, Alfred, what are your quick takeaways from Battleground? We'll just put all this in one big takeaway sandwich. to go Battleground mixed with a little Raw and SmackDown. What are your thoughts?
Okay, so WWE just came up off what I thought was arguably the best pay-per-view of the year with Great Balls of Fire. And I really think that Battleground was not only its worst pay-per-view of the year, but its worst pay-per-view, I don't know, maybe in the past couple of years, in quite some time, because I just thought it just ran so long, and they might have made a mistake by starting off so hot with the New Day versus the Usos, because even on paper, that was going to be one of the matches of the night. These just two great tag teams, and they gave them a great match, and let them have a bunch of false finishes and whatnot, and nothing else lived up to that. But it just was a boring interview. The main event went too long. You've got this, I almost called the Punjabi prison in the House of Lords, which is, you know, it wasn't too much work. But
right.
It was this big structure, and nobody, it was this blinding structure to a live crowd. And it, as impressive as it looks, it's just so bad on television to have a structure like that. And it didn't help that the match wasn't any good. It just took too long. And I didn't like it. And the thing about this pay-per-view, it was pretty much set up to fail because your three main storylines are all pretty much the same concept in that it's America versus the evil foreigner. And even if one storyline was like that, I think it was one too many because it's such an out-of-touch way of thinking that every foreigner has to be a bad guy who's an evil foreigner and the all-American good guy is you know, the American side. So, you know, they kind of booked themselves into a corner doing that. The matches weren't very good. The concepts weren't very good. The gimmicks wasn't good. It was just the pay-per-view was really a mess, and I was so shocked that it lasted the whole 3 hours, given how, you know, really small the lineup was and how much smaller the SmackDown roster is. So I thought it was a mess.
Yeah. Raw and SmackDown?
Someone for me?
For Alfred.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What's that?
Raw and SmackDown.
Raw and SmackDown. I thought Raw was a good. Raw's been very good over the past few weeks. It was a little bit of a letdown actually this past week. I liked, you know, not a lot of people are hot on a reveal, but I love the fact that they're going with a you know young up and comer like Jason Jordan, especially an African American. You know, African Americans, let's face it, don't get too many opportunities as single performers, and I hope that he takes his ball and runs with it. I thought he was very impressive in the ring, but I really do hope there's more to this. With Kurt Angle, Jason Angle, and Jason Jordan.
Yeah.
I hope that either they become a father-son heel tandem, which I think could be hilarious if, you know, Angle continued to help Jason Jordan and they were just this corrupt father-son heel tandem. Or a lot of people have been saying along is that, you know, maybe Jason Jordan and Corey Graves have come together and this whole thing is a ruse and he's not really Kurt Angle's son. And that
yeah.
could help, too. But, you know, Raw,
yeah.
I love the opening segment. Todd, Braun Strowman is getting over so huge. You know, he's like, it's weird because Roman Reigns gets a huge reaction in the crowd, and he's supposed to be this baby face, and a lot of the reactions are boos. Braun Strowman's the opposite. He also gets a human reaction. He's supposed to be a heel, and he gets cheered. So it's just this,
right.
this world that we're living in. And
yeah.
it's not that pretty cool. I like the fact that Jericho just came in hot, like he always does. Nobody hides a surprise like Chris Jericho, and I was surprised to see the United States Championship change hands once again. You know, all he's just getting is built around the U.S. title, and he keeps losing it.
Yeah, definitely the Russo booking with this this hot potato booking with the U.S. title for sure. Evan, what are your thoughts on the three events?
It just got Battleground was so it made no sense. It was just like I watched episodes of Shotgun Saturday Night. They just was. And the 12 Days and New Day, that match was very well done. I don't get why the New Day had to win. I'm sorry. I like this Thug, New Day, Hoodlum New Day. You could have kept him with the title for another month, and they could have did some funny promos in New Day when at SummerSlam. New Day doesn't need the belts. I think the Usos needed it more than anybody else. But they could just have them do a rematch at SummerSlam because, I mean, they're the only two tag teams left in WWE. Just everything, the Punjabi prison match would just made no sense. It's like you got these counts with the little small doors. Ginger's kids keep going through they keep getting annihilated by Orton. And then Great Khali, I lie to you not, guys. Me and my buddies just randomly said this Friday night hanging out. We was like, yo, wouldn't it be random if Great Khali shows up at Punjabi prison and do like a DLC appearance? And what happens? It happens. And Battleground just was, I've seen worse. I was at Extreme Rules. It was here. But, I mean, the Nakamura match ending, this was whack. DQ come on. Kevin Owens and AJ Styles match ended like out of the blue. It just was all over the place. Raw, from what I did see, I didn't see much of Raw. Busy doing some things, but what I did like, I mean, gosh, can we please end this Ambrose and Miz feud? They've been feuding since forever, it seems like the past 80 years. But what I did like is the end with Rollins and Ambrose and how Rollins tried to do the Shield sign and Ambrose kind of walked away. So I did kind of like that. Fatal 4-Way SummerSlam, we saw this happen back in February or March. Knew it was going to happen. SmackDown didn't get to see SmackDown at all. I did see that Cena, Captain 4Kids goes against Nakamura next week, and the winner faces Jinder Mahal. And you really think, like, come on, WWE, you can be any more creative? We all know Captain 4Kids is going to win. It's going to be Captain 4Kids going against the foreigner.
And that's what I don't like. Hogan back in the day. That's what I don't like. I don't like they are doing, and we have to get rolling here with the Flair of the Week, but I despise what they're doing with Nakamura. Nakamura was he was automatic money, and they're stripping him down. It's like they're going backwards to Nakamura. Automatic money when he came in, now they're just stripping him down. The interest isn't even as important anymore. Because it's overdone. It's just absolutely terrible. Dillinger is probably back into his losing ways again. Battleground was a total bust, except for the New Day Usos match, which is really good. Great to see my boy Jericho back on SmackDown. Like I said, the top potato booking with the U.S. title, I'm not a big fan of that either. So, and we'll see where, Jason Jordan looks decent. He looks very aggressive. I was a big fan of, just his fighting style. But we'll see where it goes. I think it's going to lead to somehow Stephanie and Triple H getting in the mix. Probably they were all in it together. And, that would be interesting for Jason Jordan. So I think that would help him because he's already getting booed. So.
This Jason Jordan storyline just does nothing for me. It's like okay, whatever. It just is doing nothing. I mean, maybe I have to be patient. I mean, I've said this before with storylines the first couple of weeks, and I'm like, well, it's not doing anything. It's like, okay, I get it. It's like, Jason Jordan is basically the Rick Steiner of the Alpha, the American Alpha. Chad Gable is the Scott Steiner. He got the long hair. So we expect him to cut his hair and grow like 45 pounds of muscle. And then we had Chad Gable's the Rick Stein, if you look at it. I mean, both of them.
He can roid it up as well, like Scott Steiner. Holler if you hear me.
It is now time for the Flavor of the Week.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, real quick, let's get to the we only got a couple minutes, so we're grading 2000 to 2005. Let's start with 2000 SummerSlam. What do you grade SummerSlam 2000, closed by The Rock, Kurt Angle, Triple H for the WWE Championship, also Taker and Kane, so forth. Start with Alpha.
I got good pay-per-view, a little long for my taste, but a great main event. And this was started off with Spring, and I thought probably one of the best 5 years run in the SummerSlam history.
All right, real quick, Evan, what do you got?
C+. Good main event. Overall show was okay. C+.
Yeah, I give it a B. I was a big fan of the 2 out of 3 falls match with Jericho and Benoit. That was very good.
Oh,
all right, real quick, 0-1. 01, Rock and Booker T. How about that? Lions era. This was just laced with the Lions. We'll talk about Invasion here in a few weeks. But real quick, Evan, what do you give this Invasion-style SummerSlam year?
Actually, I get this about a B+. It was a really good SummerSlam besides The Rock coming back and beating Booker T, but we all know how that goes. But I love Angle versus Austin with the rough bumps. It was one of my favorite matches of all time, especially with Jim Ross and Heyman doing commentary.
Yep. Alfred.
I'm going to have to give this a C+. I didn't think it was a bad pay-per-view, but I remember being very excited about it because this is like your first pay-per-view. It's going to be pretty much WCW versus WWE. And I didn't think, obviously, the angle didn't live up to it, but that pay-per-view didn't live up to what I thought it was going to be. So I'll say.
Yeah. I give it a B as well. Decent Invasion placement. 2002, man. I'll start off. I give this a solid A. Flair Jericho was good. Edge Guerrero was good. RVD Benoit was a really good match. Sacred Test. Michael Stripp of the Unsanctioned and Blesser Rock. I think this was a solid A. Real quick, Alfred, what do you give it?
Definitely A. It was a pay per view of the year that year, and one of the greatest SummerSlams of all time, if not the greatest.
I agree, Evan.
E+.
Yeah, it was a fantastic pay-per-view. All three to me wasn't too much worse. It was again another solid pay-per-view. I give it a B. Elimination Chamber. Elimination Chamber was very interesting. Triple H, Kane, RVD, Angle, Lesnar was really good. And then Guerrero. Retain the United States Championship and man Biz off Taker H ring. Real quick, Evan, what do you get this one here?
I give it a solid B.
Alfred.
I'm gonna give it a B plus, man. It was a lot of great matches. I think that K and RBD match is very underrated.
Yeah, absolutely. 04, Orton wins. Orton beats Benoit for the World Heavyweight Championship. Edge, Jericho, Batista was a good match too. Angle and Guerrero was also a fantastic match. Alfred, what do you give this one?
I give this B-. I really like the surprise with Randy Orton beating Chris Benoit. I thought it was a good pay-per-view.
Yeah, Evan.
Yeah, same thing. Solid B, man. It was a good pay-per-view. I always thought SummerSlam 01 up to 04, all four of those years was some of the best SummerSlams of all time.
Yep. I give it a B as well. Hogan Michaels, 05. what do you give this Super Cell Fest, Alfred?
A plus. I thought it was hilarious. You knew what was going on behind the scenes
and
makes it even funnier. The Shawn Michaels is the greatest ever.
Yeah. Real quick, Evan, what do you got?
That match alone is A++++++.
Yeah.
The rest of the people here honestly don't remember anything else from SummerSlam 05 but that main event.
Yeah, Orton, Taker, Cena, and Jericho, Mysterio, Guerrero was good for Dominic. Yeah, A for me as well. That main event was good. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen. We go to all the continent. Good night, bye.